Welcome to another episode of Ordinary Old Catholic Me. Well, this is going to be an interesting episode because just as I sat down to record, a pain went all the way up my back and very nearly sent me into a screaming mode. So, I don't know what that is. I'm hoping it's going to go away, but it falls nicely into the subject of this program, which I've done some variation of before, about suffering. And I want to focus on us Catholics more precisely in talking about our really contradictory relationship to our suffering in our faith. When you read the stories of saints, their comprehension of the theology of suffering and the action, their action of accepting that suffering as the theology teaches is right there on the page. They do it with eyes cast up into the sky towards heaven. But I have to tell you that in my life, I don't think I have actually met anyone, not even a Catholic, who seems to really make the connection between what our faith teaches about the cross, about suffering, and their own experience and response to it, or the experience of the people they love. I have a 99-year-old friend currently in the end stage of dementia, whom I've mentioned before, Veronica, who, when she was able to articulate, was about as holy as they come. She really did do the work of the Lord. She's a consecrated layperson, from saving babies, as she said, to the Legion of Mary, and quite frankly, in everything Catholic, she was front and center. She used to tell us that she had suffered in her life. She would say, "I've suffered so much," and I'm sure she did. Some things I have passing knowledge of, and some many things I don't. But even she, in her early 90s, used to wonder what the Lord was waiting for in terms of her still being here and suffering so much. Most of us, though, at least those I've run across in my reasonably long life to here, seem to completely miss the essence of our faith and the nature and transformation of suffering. That transformation, of course, is eternal. The nature here on earth hasn't changed. It's just that, and this is a big just that, God entered time, the second person of the Trinity, became fully human as well as already being fully divine, and suffered excruciatingly so that we would follow him in how we participated in his suffering through our own suffering, now not meaningless, but a doorway to the resurrection open to us. His suffering didn't end our suffering. And I have to say that I think implicitly and often explicitly, I, and maybe most Catholics, have this idea that now that he did this thing on the cross, we shouldn't suffer because he did. That completely misses the point. Have you stubbed your toe walking into your bedroom? How many curse words did you let fly? How much joining did you do with our Lord's suffering? How angry were you at the fact of the pain? And that's the easy end of suffering. My observation is that we seem to act completely antithetical to the basics of our faith training. Okay, let me be fair. At least I do. And I think I've seen others do so as well. Miss the point. Act antithetical to our faith training. I sometimes wonder that I treat every bad thing, big or small, as a personal insult. When I talk about Job, as I have a while back, he was suffering from every possible physical and psychological impairment that could be thrown at any human being. I think I focus on the part where it became clear in the interaction between God and Job that God's ways are not our ways. But now, today, I'm focusing on the fact that it's like we forgot what the phrase I used to hear as a kid actually means, offer it up. God's redemption did not mean suffering ended. It was about the how of suffering, the transition from useless, meaningless, to purposeful and meaningful, the fact that God turns that which is so despicable into a tool to bring us home. Christ's suffering opens the door to salvation that was heretofore closed completely. His suffering tells us how to do our own. His compassion, suffering with us, is a method, a most precious, incomprehensible act of God in joining his creatures, but it requires us to rethink how we view our own suffering. And that rethinking can't just be academic. It has to be absorbed into our very beings. And therein lies the rub for me, for you probably. I've been around enough sick people to have noted that they were not embracing their pain when it came upon them, even Catholics. I used to know, years ago, of a very active and even assertive Catholic who, when he was in a hospital, as he was a number of times, used to give the staff absolute H-E double sticks. He'd pull out his IVs and anything that was attached to him. He was mean to everyone around him in his suffering. There was no sign of embracing that which he preached to the rest of us, implicitly and explicitly. I admit to having seen most people, Catholic or not, seeking assiduously to avoid the suffering that they reject in reality, though in theory for their whole lives they comprehended and advocated. I suppose much of the truth is that we feel we're human and we're animals, and act reflexively, the animals that we are. And the reason that differentiates us from other animals goes out the window, except, I repeat, for the saints. I'm going to admit yet again that when I've read about the saints, particularly those who were tortured for our Lord's sake, I have been, shall we say, skeptical. You know, for example, the story of St. Lawrence, when he was being literally roasted on a spit for the faith, he supposedly said to his tormentors that he was, quote, done on one side, and they should turn him over. I try to believe it. I do. I try. But it's not what I see. When I say, and I do, not only that my sufferings are not fair, but I become angry and downright recalcitrant in the face of them, I am acting in complete derogation of the faith I claim, and I enjoin on others. I just saw a meme the other day on Facebook, or some such place. It featured Jesus at the head of a long line. He's carrying his cross, and behind him are his followers, all carrying a cross of their own, and following him down the same road. I think my basic mistake in daily life is thinking that my sufferings, great or small, are somehow in between what I consider normal daily activity, work, and enjoyment with friends. But the opposite really is true. The easier times, the pleasant times, are the things that are in between. Does this make any sense? I act as if I just get through this bad patch, my life here will finally be easy and without pain. I don't just will it, hope for it, but I demand it. But I forget this life, the way it is now, isn't what was supposed to be. This wasn't the original plan. The original plan was indeed ease and joy and the perfect vision of God. Where I am now, this is a fine mess we got ourselves into. It can't be what we want. It certainly isn't what God wanted for us. So how? How do I keep the connection between my own suffering and the essence of my faith, that I am to conform myself and my suffering to His, that this is the only way through the muck that we made by the bad exercise of free will, that God did nothing to us in the first instance except to allow us our freedom, a freedom we exercise against Him and against our own good. What He did do? He entered the muck we made, and He was beaten and tormented by it, so that it became a way back in a most paradoxical way. He took on the consequence of our evil action and transformed the consequence into a ladder to purify us. I've recently become fascinated again by the Shroud of Turin. I won't assume that anyone knows exactly what that is. It was really rather well known in the 70s and 80s. It is a relic. It purports to be the shroud, that which covered Jesus after He was taken down from the cross and was buried in the tomb. It was wrapped around Him, and when on Easter Sunday Mary Magdalene and the apostles found the tomb empty, all that remained was this shroud, and separately the face covering known as the sudarium. In the 19th century, a man, an Italian man, photographed the shroud and discovered what has become known to be a figure of a crucified man, beaten and killed in exactly the way the Gospels delineate about Christ. Every wound, the scourging, the crown of thorns, the nail wounds, the side wound, as we were taught, was the way in which Christ died before He resurrected. In 1988, a group of scientists using carbon dating said that the issue was closed. This wasn't a relic of the first century, but of some place between the 13th and, what was it, the 16th century. So it was allegedly a forgery. However, over the years, that supposed final proof of the shroud being a forgery has been debunked itself. The area of the cloth that was tested was one where repairs had been made over the centuries and included cotton weave, and cotton isn't in linen cloths originally. The protocols for the experiment we now know were violated, and regardless, these experts could not say how the image got onto the linen. They still can't. The image of the man appears on the outermost layers of the cloth. The blood penetrates, but the image does not. The image is perfect front and back, and yet this cloth would have been wrapped around him. It's not paint. It's not smoke charring. Pollen of the first century is contained within the linen. The scientists say that the amount of radiating light necessary to create the image cannot be duplicated in this technological time. Not so far. And they have been really trying. And the information within the image on a two-dimensional cloth contains three-dimensional information, such that models can be made of the figure. Now, my faith does not, and it should not, be staked on whether this cloth truly represents the second person of the Trinity in the act of resurrecting. But in watching various programs on the subject, I can say that what has become clear is the level of suffering that this incarnated God endured, that He did not have to endure. He's God. Why should God suffer the consequence of human sin? We look at the crucifix, usually all neatened up, Jesus covered demurely with a loincloth or some sort of covering. He's suspended in time, not moving as we look at the figure. I don't think maybe we see the suffering when we look at that figure. Yeah, he suffered. We know that. But when you listen to the scientists talk about what the figure on the shroud went through, the meditation upon it ought to be a game changer for our way of thinking about our own suffering. Just for starters, he was humiliated utterly in front of his friends and family and strangers. He wasn't beaten just on his back by at least, they were able to see the range by the way of the motions telling them that it was at least two men whipping him. He was beaten in every part of his body, 100, 200 lashes. That he survived this alone is miraculous. That crown of thorns we see in art, it was not what it appears, a simple circular piece with the top of the head being clear. It was like an inverse cup, and it covered his whole head. And the marks on the shroud show that it pierced clear through the skull. We know that though art often portrays the nails to have been in the center of his hands, in fact, the nails went through a particular part of the wrists, a part that could hold the body weight better on the cross, and also the part where there are two sets of nerves assuring maximum torture as the man was lifted and as he tried to keep from suffocating by using his arms to haul himself up. There's a mark on his, I think it's his right shoulder, where the cross beam was carried. There are bruises on his face where he was beaten. There is even evidence that indeed his beard was plucked, as we are told in the Bible. I don't say, knowing how I am every day, how I am today, the moods I get into, that it has yet been a game changer for me. But I have come to see too sporadically that really accessing his suffering might one day stop me from being such a lamenter about my own. Our Good Friday is our whole lives, and our Easter is the day when, in our particular judgment, Jesus says to us, "You truly did follow me in your cross, in your suffering. You really understood, finally, that the only way to transform the suffering of this world is to embrace it fully. You really understood what sin did to the human race I created for better things." I'm not even close to seeing that, and in that I find myself disappointed at my particular way of being a Catholic. Every single day, I fight the problem of suffering while being within the faith for which suffering is the key to going through the door of salvation. Redemption isn't identical to salvation. Our redemption, the most incredible, so incredible that there really is no word for it in human terms, because God, who is the epitome of essence, became one of us and took on the consequence of our sin so that we could be lifted by that consequence into his arms. There was a rock song some years ago by an artist named Joan Osborne. I kind of liked it, but I always felt that it missed the point. And in a final phrase about the Pope, calling him in Rome a bit sarcastic, typical of the world, typical of all of us sinners, some of us claiming belief, but really standing in opposition to him and our refusal to recognize him in truth and in fact. Here are some of the lyrics, which kind of give me a sense of the missing the point. She says, "If God had a name, what would it be? And would you call it to his face? If you were faced with him in all his glory, what would you ask if you had just one question? If God had a face, what would it look like? And would you want to see if seeing meant that you would have to believe in things like heaven and in Jesus and the saints and all the prophets?" But here's the thing. He does have a name. It is Jesus of Nazareth. It is Jesus, the second person of the Holy Trinity. He didn't need to make his way home. He had always been the Word, always God, always with God. What is there for us to ask? It is for us to drop to our knees before him for making out of the suffering that was never intended, but which came from the wrong, swarmy, smug, mendacious exercise of our free will, of us, our refusals to believe at all, as so many in the world are doing in unprecedented numbers, or my refusal to accept my suffering, which is a core of the faith I claim to hold, is like beating him all over again. Every refusal is a blow. I am sure that those who beat him laughed uproariously at the myth of these what would be called Christians, just like those limited human creatures now who insist that they know that Catholicism is just a pagan invention or variation. Even if the shroud were proved to be the actual burial cloth of Jesus of Nazareth, probably most of humanity would still deny it. I'm not sure that if God comes, or rather when he comes a second time, there won't be those who will dispute that he is standing right in front of us, about to say to some, "Enter heaven," and to others, "Begone from me." God is one of us. And every time I'm in a mood, or there is something that I'm scared of, or something unpleasant to feel or to do, I should be grateful, because it's my opportunity to share with God made man something which truly shakes the universe and transforms time and eternity. I get really ashamed when I do this podcast sometimes, because I'm not doing what I talk about here so often, sometimes not even slightly. I'm hopefully thinking about the right things. I might even be suggesting that we all think about the right things, about the clear-cut requirements of being Catholic, the requirements that paradoxically free us to be able to go before God and to be embraced. But my exhortation to truth does not often cause me to act as if it is true. I was scrolling on Facebook, as I do, again, and came to this quote from Venerable Fulton Sheen, who really did know a thing or two about following the faith. Quote, "The laity will have to come to a comprehension that our blessed Lord was not crucified in a cathedral between two candles, but in the world, on a roadway, in a town garbage heap. He placed himself at the very center of the world, in the midst of smut, thieves, soldiers, and gamblers." What I am supposed to be doing instead of my usual complaining, and boy, there's a lot of it, and I suspect today, with my back feeling as it is, there's going to be a lot more. But this is to be crucified with him every single day. The respites are tastes of paradise, but I'm not yet in paradise. None of us are yet in paradise. And the more I fight the suffering, the more I am essentially saying no to him. I'm saying, whether I like it or not, I will not serve. I will not join you in awe of your opening the door of salvation to me. Just for this moment, Lord, with your abundant grace, and I need as much grace as you can throw my way, that I will try to be your good servant and to follow you to heaven, which is where I really want to go. Let's pray for one another that we can finally embrace our suffering and so see the transformation that leads us to paradise. Thanks for listening to another episode of Ordinary Old Catholic Me. I hope that you're enjoying the program. Tell your friends and family about it. I don't really have a huge audience, but I realized that that doesn't matter. For some reason, I'm called to do this. I'm just going to do it until he tells me I don't need to anymore, or that it's not serving his purpose.